Loving Women's Spaces show was recorded on Monday, September 10th, 2019.
The woman in your life will do what she must do to comfort you and calm you down and let you rest now. The woman in your life, she can rest so easily. She knows everything you do, because the woman in your life is you.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Women's Spaces. My name is Elaine B. Holtz, and I'm your host. And with me at the board is my friend, my partner, my engineer, and my co-producer, Ken Norton. Good morning, Ken.
Good morning.
Wow, I'm very excited about today's show. Joining me on the phone this morning will be Dr. Harriet Fraud. Dr. Fraud is a mental health counselor and hypnotherapist in practice in New York City. She is a well-published author and writes about the pressures on families and the economics of the United States of America. Her articles have appeared in numerous publications. We will be talking about the history and implications of the Jeffrey Epstein controversy. And I myself have been very interested in who Jeffrey Epstein was and what the background is and what are the implications of what have happened. I mean, I'm kind of in the dark about it, so it'll be really interesting talking to Dr. Fraud. And I'm always thrilled to have her on because I know we can explore some in-depth truths about what types of situations are going on and how they are affecting the lives, particularly of women. She is also a regular guest of Dr. Richard Wolff's show, Economics Update, which airs on KBBF every Tuesday from 11 to 12 p.m. Wonderful, wonderful show. Well, yesterday was Grandparents Day, which is celebrated the first Sunday after Labor Day, which was yesterday, September 8th, 2019. It is only right and fitting that one day of the year should be set aside to honor our grandparents. It is the time to celebrate those special people who are always there with a hug, a kiss, a cookie, something special, or to take us somewhere special. National Grandparents Day was originated in 1978 when President Jimmy Carter declared it to be on the first Sunday after Labor Day. So happy Grandparents Day to, even though it's a little one day late, to all those folks out there who have the privilege of being grandparents. I myself am a great grandmother. I mean, it's really exciting to me. And we just celebrated little Satori Trinity Jensen's birthday, 1 year old at Doran Beach, and it was exquisite. Well, we're going to do something a little bit different this morning. For this segment, I have asked Shakina Black, who's the coordinator of the Peace and Justice Center, to talk about a special fundraising event that's happening, and I have her on the phone right now. Good morning, Shakina. Good morning. How are you doing?
Good, Elaine. Well, thank you for having me, and congratulations on the Happy Grandparents Day, and for you, your great-granddaughter's first birthday. Wonderful.
Yeah. Make sure you come close to the phone, Shakina.
How's that?
Yeah, that's much better.
Thank
Well, welcome to Women's Spaces, and I know, you know, you are the coordinator for the Peace and Justice Center, and I know you're having a special event that you're very excited about, but before we get into the event, listen, just give us a few sentences about the Peace and Justice Center, what you're up to and who you are.
Great. Well, the mission of the Peace and Justice Center of Sonoma County is to inform, support, and energize the Sonoma County community to create peace and social justice through active nonviolence. So that's the mission statement that I just read to you off of our website. And so we're a resource center. I'm happy to say the Peace and Justice Center of Sonoma County is celebrating 35 years of being a nonprofit in the community. So this is our 35th year anniversary. And we're a resource center. We network with affiliate groups. We offer meeting space. We also issue the Peace Press 6 times a year, which is quite an undertaking. And as you know, there's some really great articles in that publication. So that's the Peace and Justice Center in a very brief overview.
Another great thing I want to let my listening audience know about your center is that you do send out a list of events that are happening all month, which is really exciting to me because I find it to be one of my greatest resources for finding out what's going on in the community. Well, listen, Shakina, I know you're real excited about this event. Well, talk about it. It's a benefit concert for Andre Russell. Who was Andre Russell?
Andre's a musician who's been in the community for over 30 years, and the band he plays with, that he's a co-founder of, Midnight Sun, has been in the county for over 30 years, a wonderful, uplifting band. And so over the years, the band has done so many benefit concerts for different causes, different people, countless benefit concerts. And this time, this one is for Andre because, unfortunately, he was rear-ended on August 12th on Highway 101. He was traveling northbound, and it was around 11 o'clock at night, and he was rear-ended by a drunk driver, and the driver didn't stop. The odd thing is the bike never dropped, and it was really what saved his life because it was caught under the SUV that the drunk driver was driving. And so when he finally did stop, Highway Patrol measured the skid mark at 270 feet. So you can imagine trying, you don't know what hit you. You know, he didn't know what hit him. He doesn't know what he said. Literally, he was holding on for dear life. And so he stopped. And then the driver got out and ran away on the freeway on foot. And unfortunately, the passenger also got out and was immediately killed by an oncoming vehicle.
Oh, my God.
I know. It was just so the ramifications of these poor choices, just the pebble, you know, all the different families involved, and just the message of people, if you're going to drink, don't get in a vehicle. Or if you're going to do drugs, don't get in a vehicle. Like, really, we know this is stupid. It was a stupid, unnecessary accident. So the point about Andre is that he's also self-employed. The motorcycle is his only vehicle. And so he really needs some help. And I have to say, it took a lot of convincing. He's so humble and such a good person that he didn't want to. He said, no, other people need it more, but he actually, in reality, could use some help financially. And so we're having a great fundraiser concert with two wonderful bands and a DJ to uplift the community as well. And then where the Peace and Justice Center is involved is the only way Andre would agree to do this concert is if there was a nonprofit beneficiary. So part of the proceeds will be going to Peace and Justice Center of Sonoma County so that we can create a program specific to the dangers of drunk driving.
Well, it's amazing. What an amazing story. And please tell Andre, thank God he's alive and well and that we can do this concert for him. So give me the place. It's going to be at the Redwood Cafe, and it's located at 8240 Old Redwood Highway in Cotati. And there is, I can't mention it on the line, there is a slight to buy tickets. Tickets are available through evenbright.com, right? EvenBright.com. And also to let the folks know that all the information that we're giving over the air right now will also be on Women's Spaces at www.womenspaces.com. Well, Shakina, we're at the end of the segment. Is there anything that you'd like to add? And how can they get a hold of you if they have any questions? And
sure. So the website for Peace and Justice Center is pjcsoco.org, S-O-C-O.org. And people should wear their dancing shoes if they're coming to the show on Thursday, because Midnight Sun will be playing, Common Knowledge will be playing, and DJ Moisida will be playing. These are not sit-down songs you're going to be hearing. They're get up and dance. It's also an opportunity for people to get together in the community to get together and celebrate.
Is Andre able to play?
You know, I don't know if he's going to be playing or not. He's hoping to be at the show, but he's not quite sure where he's at, you know, if he's playing or not and singing or not. I'm not sure, and I think we'll see what happens that night. So I really appreciate the opportunity, Elaine, and I just want to remind people to remind their loved ones, don't drink and drive. It's just unnecessary.
Very important. And for you, Shakina Black, I want to thank you once again for being on Women's Spaces, for making the announcements, letting us know as a community how we can help our community members. And like I said, all the information will be on Women's Spaces at www.womenspaces.com. Thank you so much, Shakina. Take care.
You too. You too. Thank you, Elaine.
Oh, boy, I'll tell you, the things that happen to people. You know, every day that you get up in the morning, you should count your blessings. And before you go to sleep at night, count your blessings. I know when I go to sleep at night, I say to myself, I'm just so happy that nothing's happened to any of my children or my daughter or my husband or my dog or the world. I mean, it's just, it's really crazy. Well, I do have a few announcements here that I'd like to make. You know, next week I'm going to be having a very, very special program. We're going to be doing a program on climate change. And what it's going to be it's going to be in support of the strike with us that's happening on September 20th. We're going to have folks on from 350.org and from Daily Acts. They're going to be talking about what's going to be happening on September 20th. Let me just remind people, it's going to be a global climate strike happening on September 20th. From 12 noon to 2 o'clock in Courthouse Square in Santa Rosa. The schedule is it starts at 9:30. They'll meet at Santa Rosa JC Quad from 11 to 12. They'll be marching, and then from 12 to 1, they'll be rallying speakers, and from 1 to 2, there'll be actions. I love their actions. You know, it's really, I've been to a few of their events, and they really get people stirred up to do something. And also to remind people, you know, we're in a real crisis now. I mean, we're in a climate change crisis, and I mean, so much is going on, and, you know, we have to participate, and we have to support these efforts, and this global climate strike is going to be all across the world, all across the planet, you know. And then on the 16th, which is the next Monday, I'm going to be having a special climate change program where we're going to talk about the goals of this march and what people want to accomplish and what some of the motivation is behind the action that is being taken. And I love it because I'm going to be co-producing it. I've asked Carrie Fugert from Daily Acts to come and join me and help me. She's been helping getting guests. And also, just to let folks know, I mean, on the 20th, to come out. Every human being should be out in the street. Every mother, every father, every sister, every brother, every aunt, every cousin. I mean, come on. The human family is in trouble, and we have to show up. So that's going to be the Global Climate Strike on September 20th, 2019. And like I said, a very, very special show next Monday on Women's Spaces to support this effort. Another really interesting thing that's happening, and I like women out there to mark this on their calendar, that's September 28th and 29th. They're going to, it's interested in politics, want to run for office. I think every woman should just come to this event. Just come and be there and learn about it. It's going to be put on by the Candidate and Campaign Training Organization of the AFL-CIO Union. And I really, really believe it's going to be a major event. It's going to be happening for 2 days on September 28th and September 29th. And it's going to be at the Plumbers Hall at 3473 Santa Rosa Avenue in Santa Rosa. There is a cost, and you can email M. Hirschfield, M-H-I-R-S-H-F-I-E-L-D _NBLC @att.net. And get more information. And remember, like I said, everything that I repeat on this show goes on to the website on Women's Spaces at www.womenspaces.com. There is a slight charge, but it really, really looks like a very, very interesting experience. And also, you know, you kind of get your feet wet to think, well, maybe you will run for office. I mean, you never know. You have to be willing to take a chance. You have to be willing to learn. You have to be willing to question and then make a decision. And then one last announcement, and that's something that's happening this Friday, Friday the 13th, and it's also happening 2 days, Friday, September 13th and Saturday, September 14th. And it's called the Second Annual Festival of Belonging, and it's going to be at the Glazer Center at 547 Mendocino Avenue in Santa Rosa. And it really looks like a wonderful event. And here's a little note they have. The festival brings neighbors together to renew the health of our community by strengthening social ties. This year, through art and through thought-provoking conversations, we focus on how homelessness affects all of us. So that's going to be the Second Annual Festival of Belonging, Friday, September 13th and Saturday, September 14th at the Glazer Center at 547 Mendocino Avenue, Santa Rosa. Well, a lot to think about. And one last time, I will say it. All the information that we have said this morning is all on Women's Spaces at www.womenspaces.com. Well, we're going to take a musical break, and the song I'll be playing is Can't Hold Me Down, sung by Christina Aguilar. I love this song, Can't Hold Us Down. You know, we're going to be talking, when we return, I will be talking with Dr. Harriet Fraud, who is a mental health counselor and hypnotherapist in practice in New York City. She's a regular guest here at on Women's Spaces. I'm so honored to have her, and she's also a regular guest on Richard Wolff's Economic Update, which plays on KBBF 89.1 on Tuesdays from 11 to 12. And we're going to be talking about the history and implications of the Jeffrey Epstein case. So let's go ahead and listen to Can't Hold Me Down, sung by Christina Aguilar.
An opinion, should I keep quiet just because I'm a woman? Call me a bitch because I speak what's on my mind. Guess it's easier for you to swallow if I sat and smile. When a female fires back, suddenly the cocky don't know how to act. So here's what a little boy would do, making up a few false rumors or two. That for sure is not a man to me, smattering names for popularity. He says you only get to be through controversy, but now it's time for me to come and give you more to say. Message I'm bringing. Call me whatever, cause your words don't mean a thing. Cause you ain't even a man enough to handle what I say. If you look back at history, it's a common double standard of society. The guy can tell the club, the more it can score, while the girl can do the same and yet you call her a whore. Now I don't understand why it's okay. The guy can get away with it, the girl gets named. All my ladies come together and make a change. Start a new beginning for us, everybody say.
Kim and Christina Aguilera.
Yeah. Down and cannot silence us. For you just joining us, you are listening to KBBF 89.1 FM, Calistoga, Santa Rosa. I want to remind my listeners the opinions expressed here are not necessarily the opinions of KBBF, its board of directors, its members, or Women's Spaces. Well, welcome back. You're listening to Women's Spaces, and I'm your host, Elaine B. Holtz. And without further ado, I want to introduce my guest joining me on the phone. And it truly is an honor to introduce her, and I like to think of her as one of my regular guests, Dr. Harriet Fraud. Welcome, Dr. Fraud. Welcome to Women's Spaces once again.
I'm so glad to be here. Thank you, Elaine.
And I hope it's okay that I call you Harriet.
Sure.
And before we begin, can I tell my listeners just a little bit about you? Is that okay?
Certainly.
Okay. Can you come a little closer to the phone?
How's that?
Yeah, that's much better. Dr. Harriet Fraud is a mental health counselor and hypnotherapist in private practice in New York City. She speaks regularly and writes about the intersecting crisis in U.S. relationships, personal life, politics, and economics. She was a founding member of the second wave of women's movement and has remained an activist for her entire life. She appears regularly on the radio for Economic Update, the Juliana Forlono Morning Show, M.K. Mendoza, and Women's Spaces. Her very latest work appears in Knowledge Class in Economics, Marxism Without Guarantees. and that's Rutledge 2019. And today we'll be talking about the history and the implications of the Jeffrey Epstein case. Anything you'd like to add, Harriet?
And I have a website, Harriet, H-A-R-R-I-E-1-T, F-R-2-A-S-1-D, FRAAD.com.
And also, like I always remind my listeners, anything that we announce on the radio is on Women's Spaces at www.womenspaces.com. So not to worry if you missed it. Listen, Harriet, this is really, I am so thrilled to have you on the air with me talking about this very controversial subject, Jeffrey Epstein, and all that surrounds his case and what has happened. And, you know, I'm so happy to have an expert like yourself on. I know someone who's done a lot of research. You wrote an excellent paper that I have the privilege of reading with your daughter Tess, and I found it extremely, extremely informative. But my first question has to be, is talk a little bit about what motivated you to begin to explore. I mean, here you are a hypnotherapist, a therapist that you're working with people, and here you are also working with politics and in the political arena, and now you start investigating this case. What was your motivation?
My motivation is what has captured me and a lot of America, which is, this is a case where the depravity of our politics, of our capitalist system, and of our male gender bias come together in one ugly creature, like a giant squid propelling itself from all these different legs forward. Because Jeffrey Epstein was a sex trafficker and a sex predator who was known. It just came out that at MIT, in the media division at MIT, their media center, took $7 million from Epstein after he was convicted of being a sex predator in Florida. And there were 36 women testifying against Epstein in Florida. He got a tiny slap on the wrist for that. He got a 13-month sentence during which he was released from jail 12 hours a day. And during those 12 hours a day, he continued to sexually abuse girls and farm them out to various rich and powerful men.
Well, you know, here
he got 13 months with 12 hours a day release time, brokered by our former labor secretary appointed by Trump, who was one of the many people who preyed upon and raped young girls, thanks to Epstein. So we're talking about such a morass of corruption and sexism at the same time that it brings it all together. And I think that's why it captivated the nation.
Well,
certainly captivated me.
Let me just ask you a question. You know, it's real interesting. I mean, you're talking about this man that had tremendous amount of power. He must have, because in order to get this type of sentence where he's able to leave his jail cell for 12 hours a day and then come back and forth as if he's a free agent. And all of a sudden, you know, you hear about him. He's someone who you've never heard about before. How come all of a sudden this just came bubbling to the surface? I mean, what happened, and what was the first step towards making this charge? And who is he anyway?
Well, it's interesting. Let's start with who he is. He was a clever manipulator. He was a child of working class parents. His father was a gardener. His mother was a teacher's aide. And he was clever at math and science. He dropped out of college, and yet, for some reason we really could only guess with all of his sex hookups that he offered, he got Attorney General Barr's father, the head of Dalton, a wildly prestigious school in New York, a school that costs $51,350 even in kindergarten. He got him to give him a job. He got Epstein a job teaching math and science in high school when he hadn't even graduated from college and was still very young. There, he found other wealthy parents that he cultivated, one of whom got him a job at Bear Stearns Stock and Bond Corporation. There, he met other rich men, and by the time he died, he'd accumulated $500 million. What he did was he figured out for very wealthy men how to get away with not paying taxes and holding on more of their billions of dollars, and how to make clever investments and how to hide money in things like charities. He became the chief financial person in charge of all of L. Brand Wexner's, Mr. Wexner's investments, which were billions of dollars. And he used that to leverage his way. For example, Epstein invested $6 billion in the Morgan Chase Wealthy Donor, Wealthy Customers Fund.
You know,
there were people at Morgan Chase who said, no, let's not do that. He's already been convicted as a sex predator.
You know, it's so
$6 billion, it was excused.
What's so interesting about it, when you mention billions of dollars, I can't even wrap my mind around it. I mean, that he had accumulated this much money and this much power. Well, how did all this other stuff happen? From what I've been reading and reading your report, I understand he had a private plane, which was called the Lolita, that he flew some business people over to his own private island. I mean, he was that wealthy and that much prestige, where he was bringing people back and forth from his island.
Yes, he owned two islands in the, ironically enough, Virgin
two
island.
Of them. Oh, wow!
And he took them to Little James Island, which was called the Lolita Express. Was the jet on which he took them. They landed there, and it was called the Lolita Express because you got to rape young girls on the plane, and then again when you landed.
By the way, I just want to let my listeners know that 99% of this stuff is documented.
Oh, it's all out. It's all documented.
It's all documented. It's not like
nothing that I didn't learn from newspapers like the New York Times, Vox, Rolling Stone, Business Insider, the Wall Street Journal. It was everywhere.
Well, you know, there's two things that keep coming up in my mind about this whole thing. The first thing is that the whole trial, like you said, the first time that he was convicted by Mr. Acosta, and I believe he was sentenced to, I think it was something like 3 years, and then he was able to spend time in this jail cell, but he was released for 12 hours a day.
It wasn't 3 years. I have to correct you. The original sentence was 18 months, commuted to 13 months.
Oh, my goodness. I gave him
a year and 1 month.
Oh, my goodness.
12 hours a day. Off.
My goodness. A young African-American boy carrying three joints would get more than that. I mean, that is really something. So he served that time. And then all of a sudden, what happened again that it came up? Where did that come from?
Well, what happened was, after he got out of jail with a sentence that only mentioned him as a sex predator in Florida, not in all states, not on a federal level, he poured enormous money into various charities and institutions so that his philanthropy would hide his crimes. For example, at MIT's Media Center, he raised $7 million for them. And he gave $1.2 million to the head of that center, Ito, Mr. Ito, who then made sure that Jeffrey Epstein's gifts, although he had to say they were anonymous, but that they were shared and that everyone knew what a benefactor he was. He was cited by Forbes as a man of charity because he gave so much money to Harvard, to Yale, to various scientific institutions, for departments, whole departments at Yale and Harvard, and they all took his money, paid it as it was.
Do you think that there was knowledge that that's what he was doing? I mean,
I think there was knowledge that he'd served time for sex abuse. And if anybody, look, one of the women at MIT who was looking, she was related to MIT, she was looking to start a cryptocurrency fund. I think her name was Elizabeth Smart, I'm not sure. But she asked them at the MIT center, the media center, who can I appeal to for funds? And Ito, who was the head of the MIT center, said, try Jeffrey Epstein. So she said in 5 minutes on Google, I could see this was a predator. And of course, I didn't want the money.
Well, that's interesting. So she was able to kind of pick up on that.
There's
to me, again, it's so hard to wrap my mind around it. You see, here's this man who's a philanthropist. He's giving money to charities to help to do all these other things. And here on the backside, he's still doing all these dark things. And it sounds like that there's a level of privilege in this whole scenario that seems to be that because he had this kind of privilege, he was able to work his way through and do all these different things and be able to have a lighter sentence. But how did that change with this second time around, where all of a sudden the prosecutor said, no, he's dangerous to society, we can't even let him out of a jail cell? How did that all?
That's very important, because it was the work of a brave reporter whose name is Julie Brown on the Miami Herald. She was appalled by the tap on the wrist that Epstein got after his massive sex abuse. And it wasn't only that he raped the girls. He arranged for other prestigious men like Prince Andrew. This is all from the newspaper. Prince Andrew, Trump, Clinton, Leon Black of the Apollo World Management Fund. These are some of the richest men in the world, multi-billionaires. Les Staley, who is now the president or the CEO of Barclays Bank, who was former at Morgan Chase and so on. He arranged for these flights where they got to rape young girls, so he had something on them. He also arranged cameras, unbeknownst to these men, in the rooms where they got, quote, massages, which is a chance to rape young women.
Wasn't that something that was just found out when I believe it was the FBI, when they raided one of his apartments or the island?
They raided the house that he had gotten from Wexner of L Brands that was $56 million when he got it and is now worth $71 million, the biggest mansion in New York City. They opened the safe and found documents. But even before, you know, they subpoenaed the flight logs of the Lolita Express, but nobody's ever seen the names, because they're some of the richest, most powerful men in the world. But they did find a whole cache of documents. And 2 days after that, Epstein, quote, committed suicide. However, people heard screaming from his cell. Other inmates who were reported on CBS and never talked to again. His injuries were not entirely consistent with hanging, but somewhat more consistent with strangulation. The guards that were supposed to guard his cell and check every half an hour both fell asleep for the 3 hours while he was murdered or ostensibly committed suicide. The cellmate that was assigned to him after he had attempted suicide previously, or who knows what, he was found with choke marks on his neck earlier. And by law, you have to have a cellmate if you've attempted suicide. The warden, who's a federal employee of none other than Mr. Barr, transferred his cellmate out, assigned guards who were working overtime on double shifts, and who both fell asleep after 3 hours, you know, for 3 hours straight, and nobody did toxicology reports to figure out why they both simultaneously fall asleep, and nobody looked into the screams that were heard by other inmates that night of his ostensible suicide.
Well, let me ask you a question. This is another thing I found, that he was arrested again the second time. It happened on July 6, 2019, on federal charges of sex trafficking of minors in Florida and New York. He died in his jail cell on October 10, 2019. Then the case against Epstein was closed on August 29th after a federal judge dismissed all criminal charges. So does this mean that he's not going to be charged? That what is going to happen with all this then?
Well, because he's dead and they say they're still looking into it. His lawyers don't believe that he committed suicide. They believe that he was murdered. The woman who was his right-hand person and who went was his primary recruiter of these girls, all of whom had to be under 25. She hung out outside high schools and recruited these girls, who were mainly terribly poor or close to homelessness. And she's disappeared.
Oh, she's missing?
She had a British passport, and somehow they can't find her. They found Bin Laden. They couldn't find her. So either she's dead too, or there's a lot of suspicious things going on here to halt this inquiry.
Okay, let's stop right here, and we're going to take a musical break. And then when we come back, Harriet, I want to find out, what is all this teaching us, and what is it that we should be doing from this point on with situations like this? I mean, it's mind-boggling as I'm listening to the story. I mean, even though I have read about it, even though I've read your paper, it's still hearing about it. To me, it just smells of privilege, and it's really a very sad situation. Well, we're going to take a musical break right now, and I think this song is very appropriate. We're going to be playing a song by Concrete Blonde called, you're going to love this, Harriet, Everybody Knows. one of the lines is, everybody knows the dice are loaded. Anyway, when we
right, Leonard Cohen made up that song.
Yeah, but this
great
is
great song.
I know this is sung, you know, because it's women's faces. I always try to find a woman singing these songs. So it's done by Concrete Blonde. And when we return, we will continue with our conversation with Dr. Harriet Broad, who is a mental health counselor and hypnotherapist in practice in New York City. She's also a regular on the Richard Wolff Show Economic Update on KPBF 89.1 FM every Tuesday from 11 to 12. And we're talking about the history and implications of the Jeffrey Epstein case. So let's go ahead and listen to Everybody Knows. And when we come back, we'll just continue our conversation.
Everybody knows that the dice are loaded. Everybody rolls with the fingers crossed. Everybody knows that the war is over. Everybody knows that the good guys lost. Everybody knows the fight was fixed. The poor stay poor and the rich get rich. That's how it goes. And everybody knows. Everybody knows that the boat is leaking. Everybody knows that the captain lied. Everybody got this broken feeling. Like a father or the dog just died. Everybody talking to their pockets. Everybody wants a box of chocolates and a long stem rose. And everybody knows. Everybody knows that you love me, baby. Everybody knows that you really do. Everybody knows that you've been faithful. Give or take a night or two. Everybody knows you've been discreet. So many people you just had to meet without your clothes. And everybody knows. Everybody knows. Everybody knows. That's how it goes. And everybody knows. Everybody knows. Everybody knows, that's how it goes, and everybody knows. Everybody knows that it's now or never. Everybody knows that it's me or you. Everybody knows that you'll live forever when you've done a line or two. Everybody knows the deal is rotten. Old Black Joe's still picking cotton for your ribbons and bows, and everybody knows. And everybody knows that the plague is coming. And everybody knows that it's moving fast. And everybody knows a naked man and woman are just a shining artifact of the past. Everybody knows the scene is dead. There's gonna be a meter on your bed that will disclose what everybody knows. And everybody knows that you're in trouble. And everybody knows what you've been through. From the bloody cross on top of Calvary to the beach of Malibu. And everybody knows it's coming apart. Take one last look at this sacred heart before it blows. And everybody knows. Everybody knows. Everybody knows. That's how it goes. And everybody knows. Everybody knows. Everybody knows.
Everybody knows, but nobody's talking about it. Well, welcome back. You're listening to Women's Spaces, and I'm your host, Elaine B. Holtz. And again, I'm talking with Dr. Harriet Fraud, and we're going to continue our conversation talking about Jeffrey Epstein and the case, all the drama, let's say, that's surrounding this case. And at this point of the segment, we're going to talk about what kind of lessons, what is this teaching us? And it's really, I want to just read something to you, Harriet. As women, we scratch our heads wondering what causes some men to do the things they do. You know, you had some information about a man by the name of John Bowlby, the famous founder of attachment theory, explains that emotionally connects people. And you wrote about the stages of child's frustrated efforts at connection may apply to why many men's emotional issues come up the way they do. So can you talk a little bit about that?
Yes, I'll tell you a little bit about John Bowlby and the other theorists who help us answer the question, children here, why is it exciting to rape these young, barely pubescent girls? And one of them, the Bowlby theory, is that what happens to children neglected is that first, their first stage is anger, their second is a kind of despair, and their third is withdrawal from connection. And for a lot of men's emotional needs are not met. By the time they're about 10 to 12, 12 even, 13, the only neediness they're allowed to have is a neediness around sex. They're not allowed to need hugs. They're not allowed to need tenderness. They're not allowed to need understanding. If they get really close to another boy and want to be friends, they're accused of homosexuality. There's this huge pressure. The coach, if they're not fighting hard enough, says, what's the matter? You're on your period? You're a girl? You know, there is this terrible, terrible denigration of emotional neediness, which we all have, and it's all siphoned into sex. And a lot of these men are furious that as young men, they were denied sex from women, the women their age, because the women knew they'd be labeled as sluts by these very men who experimented with them.
Well,
they're the ones who pay.
Did you happen to hear the song before you came on? Can't hold
yes.
me down. That's what she's talking about.
That's right, absolutely. And so there's also the theories of Dorothy Dinnerstein, who says that all children grow up in a matriarchy where they're most, you know, they're babysitters, they're mothers, they're daycare workers, their early childhood educators. They're all women. And everyone's most powerless and often humiliating experiences are at the hands of these omnipotent-seeming women. Now, girls identify with women so that they have that continuity. But boys who have no male models present, and this is Chatterjee, says they identify as, I'm the not woman. I'm the not girl. I'm the not feminine. And it creates this rage at and envy for women who can be emotional when all they have is sex. And they pour themselves into sex with women of the same age as they were when they began to know their neediness and siphon it into sex. And that would be changed if early childhood was dominated by men and women together. If men worked in child care centers, if we had, like Norway, Sweden, Denmark, Iceland, mandatory paternity leave so men wouldn't get extra credit for staying at work. If we had, like they have all over these countries, because I've gone and been amazed, there's a changing table in every men's room where you have long parental leaves that can be taken by fathers or mothers, and you have maternity and paternity leaves, and the government pays the business while you're on leave so that the business doesn't resist this because they're losing money. They lose some continuity, but whatever. And then you're guaranteed a job at your same level back when you come back so that there's every inducement. In Sweden now, they don't use gender pronouns in preschool. They don't say his, hers. They say yours, and they talk to the child's name because they're trying to discourage that polarization of gender. And if we did that, we too, I think, would change this dynamic. And this was revealed by Julie Brown, an incredibly courageous woman from the Miami Herald, who looked up the names of all the 36 girls who had complaints against Epstein who weren't heard. And Alan Dershowitz of Harvard, who was one of the people who flew the Lolita Express, used his prestige to keep her from the Pulitzer Prize, but she blew the case open. And in this era where women are standing up, which is another thing that's stopping it, Me Too, Time's Up, people are interested and able to publicize this, even though right now it's silenced. There are still efforts to figure out what went on.
Well, it sounds like too, what's happening is the casting couch is no longer appropriate. I mean, it's everything is out on the table, so to speak. You talk about what's happening in the preschools with young men not having enough male identity. What are some other ideas? What are some other ideas how we can change this gender gap that is happening here? I mean, when you're looking at our society, I mean, you take Jeffrey Epstein. You know, he's just a symptom. He's just a symptom of what's happening. He's expressing a disease or a in unity. I studied for unity, and they say disease is a dis-ease. Like something is out of sync. It's not working. It's not right. So all these other things come into play. So what are some of your ideas about how this can change? How can we? What are some things simple things that we can put into place?
We could have paternity and maternity leave, just like they do in most of the developed world. The United States is very far behind here. We are one of four countries that doesn't have paid maternity leave. And those other countries are Swaziland, Somalia, and what's the other one? Oh, yeah, Papua New Guinea. That's whose company we're in. We could make paternity leave. In fact, we could do what all the Scandinavian countries do. Every man has to take a paternity leave. We could have family vacation time, which every other developed country, even Brazil, has, so that families could spend time together. We could do all sorts of things that are routine policy elsewhere that would encourage men to interact with their children. And we don't. And if we did that, boys wouldn't grow up that way. Also, we could have in our school system the kind of sex education, if it weren't for the puritanical influences in the United States, Sweden and Norway and Finland and Iceland begin sex education in kindergarten, where if the bee doesn't pollinate the flower doesn't bloom. By junior high, they're talking honestly about changes in their bodies, and in high school, their feelings towards a partner and their responsibility towards a partner and towards the life that might be created. That would help people. You know, there's a policy that was tried in New Haven, Connecticut, which was quite successful, to stop teen pregnancy, where every child in high school, starting as a junior, had to hold a 20-pound bag of flour, which was their baby, was labeled baby, and not put it down the whole day. That's what it's like having a child.
Oh, let me tell you, one of the things about being a great-grandmother, I've become more of an observer. I cannot believe what it takes to raise a child, and it takes both parents equally. It's a very well. Listen, we're almost coming to the end of the segment, and there's just one thing that I have to cover with you before we say goodbye. And this has just been a fascinating conversation. I mean, we could go on and on. There is so much to this. I mean, the whole thing around gender is very, very interesting to me, and we need to start looking at those things. And Harriet, you know, we're about to celebrate 100 years since women got the vote. And back then, the challenge was to get the vote. What are some of the things now, the major challenges that you believe right now in relation to all that's going on with Epstein and some of the politics and what's going on the border, all of those issues that are happening right in front of our face? What are some of the things that you believe? You know, here we have, you know, Brett Kavanaugh was appointed to the Supreme Court. I mean, it's scary. What are some of the things that you believe women need to do, and what do they need to stand up for in your mind?
Well, we need to have maternity and paternity leaves, and we need to change gender in early childhood. And we need to have elder care and child care. You know, at any point in America, men make more than women. Women make 80 to 81% of what men get. But if you look at women's lives, according to the policy research in Washington, D.C., these interesting studies, over a 15-year period, women make 42% of what men earn because women are out of the workforce taking care of children and the elderly. We have to take care of children in our society. In France, daycare is free starting at 3 years old, and it's $1 an hour before that. In Germany, in Sweden, in Switzerland, in all of these countries have excellent child care. That's what we have to do. And we have to have male teachers and female teachers. And we have to look at gender as crucial. Gender formation, so that people can see one another as human beings, not sex objects. It's very important, particularly the training for males who grow up in a matriarchy and should grow up with male models of men who love and interact with children.
You know, it's, you know, as I'm sitting here and as I'm listening to you, there's just like this sadness that comes over me. I mean, I just suddenly feel this sadness when I think of the billions of dollars that they spend on the military, the billions they're taking from the military to build this wall. I mean, there's so many things that need to happen for our children, for the future. I mean, we don't realize, it's like, to me, if we don't invest in our future, in our children, in our future, we're going to end up with more Jeffrey Epsteins. I mean, it becomes the values of the culture. Get ahead, make money. I mean, most of us, you know, if we haven't reached a certain status, we feel very insecure, and we feel like we are not existent, like we really don't matter.
And these billionaires are above the law.
Exactly.
As we can see.
So it makes me feel sad, but at the same time, I think it's very, very hopeful. And I want you to know, I really appreciate that we had this interview. As you know, through our phone conversations, I did stretch myself a little bit. I don't necessarily cover controversial subjects like this, but I think this is a very, very important topic for women to look at, for women to understand, and for, you know, we have to stop thinking boys will be boys. You know, if there's no longer that idea, boys will be boys. Boys have to grow up and start treating women with respect. Well, listen, we're at the last moments of the show. Is there any last things that you would like to say? Give us your website once again, and anything that you'd like to say.
The website is harrietfraad.com. harrietfraad.com. And what I'd like to say is, boys should be human, and so should girls, that we have to start treating children as human beings instead of pink and blue separate from birth. We have to really emphasize connection between men and children, and between men and each other, and between men and emotion. Women have had ambition added, which we should have. Now men need to have emotion added, and vulnerability, and need outside the need for sex.
Well,
and that will be with gender change.
Well, Dr. Freud, I want to thank you from the bottom of my heart for such a wonderful, wonderful interview. Well, that's it for our show, folks. A special thank you to Dr. Harriet Fraud, who is a psychotherapist and hypnotherapist in private practice in New York City. She is a founding member of the feminist movement and the Journal of Rethinking Marxism for 40 years. She has been a radical committing to transforming U.S. personal and political life, and I truly appreciate her that. A reminder, tell your friends that Women's Spaces will be aired again at 11 p.m. on Monday evening. Remember, our children are our future, and we must never lose sight of that.
A woman in your life, she's someone to pursue. She's patient and she's waiting, and she'll take you home now. The woman in your life, she can wait.
The previous Women's Spaces show was recorded on Monday, September 10th, 2019.